Welcome back. I think we're at episode 340, right? 340.
I believe so, yes.
Okay, Joe. Some happenings in Ireland we'll talk about. There seems to be some I guess a reaction, a countercultural revolution, if you perhaps, in the budding in Ireland, but we'll talk about that with the referendum. But this past couple of days, this I've seen this in the news for about a year now. Concerns over TikTok, and there's a lot of politicians, a lot of people talking about the threat that TikTok poses to national security because TikTok is owned by a Chinese concern. I think it's called BitDance, and of course, TikTok is on everyone's or a lot of people's phones. It's a social it's social media. And they're claiming that it's a threat to national security, because theoretically the Chinese intelligence or the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party has access to everyone's phone who has this app on it. That's the supposed threat. But there was a leak. I think this comes courtesy Iranian intelligence. I think it was a source. It's nice to know that someone is actually spying on I'm sorry, Jonathan Greenblatt. There was a call he was on when he was talking about this was last year, I think, about TikTok's a big threat because that's where you get a lot of the criticism of Israel, particularly among younger people. And they most of their news they get through TikTok. And so this is a problem for them. This is he declared it a national security threat. Of course, the question is which nation is he talking about? It's, for America, so what? What if young people are criticizing Israel? They don't really have a treaty with the United States. They're not really even an ally. We hear that loose talk all the time. They're our ally. There's no treaty with Israel. They don't want it in writing, I guess you could say. Keep it informal. Works better for them. But there's this a bill in Congress. I think it passed. It's called Ban TikTok Bill. I think it's not so much really banning. It's a bill that passed 350 and somewhat votes of 65 that would force sale TikTok, I think, from the Chinese concern, I think it was with his, which is BitDance, to an American concern. A quote on American, by the way, quotes on American. So there's the bill that has to go to the Senate now, and it would empower the president to force sale the sale of this of American TikTok to an American concern. And it came out last week that Steve Mnuchin. I pronounce that. He was the Treasury Secretary for Donald Trump, and he is Jewish, lest anyone wonder. He announced at the same time that this bill is sailing through Congress overwhelmingly. He has announced that he's putting together a consortium of investors, in quotes, right, to buy TikTok. So this is a great time to set up a consortium to buy TikTok if there's indeed a force there, because that would really reduce the price, if I understand. So it's kind of a shakedown. He said it on a, I think it was on CNBC. He was doing an interview. His comments came one day after the House voted overwhelmingly to approve a bill that would ban the popular app from operating in the U.S. or force its Chinese owner BitDance to sell off the company's U.S. operations within 6 months. Mnuchin said, "I think legislation should pass. I think it should be sold. It's a great business, and I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok." He also admitted in an interview that he had been working on this legislation or this initiative while he was Treasury Secretary. So, as a government employee, he was working on regulations or government initiatives that would facilitate a business venture that he'd be investing in the near future. Now, that's corruption, isn't
Yes, it is. Yes.
it? So he admitted to this, but it's just such an obvious maneuver because they're claiming it's because of the Chinese communists, the Chai Coms. And again, social media is very damaging to society. It's very damaging, particularly for children, which a lot of young kids and teenagers, young people aren't on TikTok. It is not having a salutary effect on our culture, particularly on our young people. TikTok's full of pornography and other things that are problematic to the culture, of course. But they're targeting the political discussions on TikTok. They're claiming TikTok is bad, but to the extent that TikTok is weaponized, it's not the Chinese, it's the Americans that are weaponized. It's our Jewish culture, popular culture that has weaponized TikTok, not the Chinese. From what I understand, TikTok in China is like a lot of technical advice and academic concerns. So they're not really, and also the Chinese government actually enforces social media, restricts it because they're aware of the baleful, the negative effects it has on the culture, particularly youth, so not burdened with the First Amendment or that excuse, they can restrict pornography and things like that. But it was interesting that former Treasury Secretary Mnuchin is putting together a consortium of investors who are probably all Jewish, who are being set up to buy this for a song if this law passes and President Bush, Biden signs it. But their main concern is that TikTok is full of young people criticizing Israel, particularly after October 7th, and they're claiming that's anti-Semitic, but they're claiming this is a maneuver against China. So it really is, it's see-through, but it's a typical maneuver where they're using national security as a threat to, or national security as a pretext to advance the Zionist Jewish interest.
Yeah, it's it's ridiculous in that TikTok, you know, had a problem with pornography, of course, which I've cited a number of times in our discussions. But what was positive about it, it was a platform of free speech. And therein, you had a lot of people criticizing Israel and also Jewish behavior in general. Mm-hmm. TikTok had a lot of sort of the beginning of kind of an organized concern about undemocratic amount of political power and financial power in the United States, right? And these would erupt as little streams of humor, but other people would add on to them. You know how these things roll on the internet, and so it certainly was something that the Judeo-Masonic sort of secret society would be concerned about it being a free speech platform. And so the sophistry here is that what will happen is they will get rid of the free speech part of it and expand the pornography part of it. So the yes. part that was actually beneficial to culture, wherein free speech was permitted and legitimate as well as illegitimate, but that's just how things occur, in human discussion.
So by squashing free speech and promoting pornography, it becomes genuinely an American institution at that point.
It does indeed. and so this is now, this is very clever, and it's sort of kind of the just general, I don't want to get too generalized here, but I want to point out, I've been reading recently some works by this guy Wiebe, and he has chronicled in the statistics of the German Reich between 1892 to 1901. So he's looked at Jewish crimes compared to Christian criminals, just to see if there was like some kind of cultural meaning. And what he found was actually kind of interesting and relates to what's going on with TikTok. So in the category of fraud and trickery, Jews were found to have, in terms of their percent of the population, 14 times greater convictions than Christian. Usury, 13 times. Copyright infractions, 11 times. Fraudulent bankruptcy, 9 times. Fraudulent insolvency, 6 times. Receiving stolen property, 5 times. So this isn't incrementally different. I mean, this is just a profound cultural difference in how the Jewish population was approaching kind of behavior under the law. And this is actually kind of echoes the early kind of American ethnographic studies, which pointed out that when Jewish immigrants came, that the courts here became stymied, because in the case where oath to tell the truth don't mean anything, it's really hard to have any kind of trust-based a judicial system. I mean, bear in mind, Kolo Nidre, gives them the chance to wipe away all the sins. But I was just going to say, and this is maybe a little far afield, but I wanted to bring it up because perhaps we can talk about it at some other show, that really what was being reflected with those statistics was the creation of the Talmudic study schools that occurred between like 1860 and 1880, and from which the immigrants into Germany came from. And in those schools, which were all, they were basically in what's called the Pale. I don't know if you know, the physical area, you know, that had been established between Russia and Europe where Jews were permitted to conduct business and live. But there, what happened was they developed all of their these academies of Talmudic study. And that's where the Talmudic Jew, as in a general sense, was actually created. They had these yeshivas, which were designed to study the Talmud, and they had what were, you know, have been referred to as Hasidic dynasties. And so this was where, in during this period, that you developed, I think, this culture of Talmudic perspective toward Gentiles, you know, wherein you can do anything you want. There really isn't any sort of borders or legal structures you have to pay attention to, as long as you're promoting Jewish interests. It was here that the Talmudic, which is, I mean, by any, you know, reasonable understanding, is a highly self-centered and racist perspective, right? Because it pr promotes Jewish, not just separatism, but you know, ascendancy, right? Is the most important chosen people. All of the stuff is
Yeah, well,
so
yeah, it's supremacy and privilege, yeah.
supremacy, right? So from there, the immigrants sent into Germany then, you know, produce those statistics, which I'm now going to circle back. When you see the little maneuver here that's going on, I mean, it's kind of hard not to see some connections, isn't it?
Yeah, and yeah, there's a reason why, when a house, when a building burned, it was called Jewish lightning.
Right.
They were involved in insurance fraud. You alluded to it, panhandling, which is obviously it's fencing or laundering stolen goods. They were big into that, and not every, of course, but disproportionately to the point it was culturally and socially significant. I think there was a head of the police in New York City, like as early as 1908 or 1909, had written about this. I think it was Bingaman was his name, and he just talked about it. This was a law enforcement issue. This was a problem. They talked about other problems associated with other immigrant groups like Irish and alcoholism, criminal behavior. But he was forced to resign. That's early as 1908, 1909. I think that predates the ADL. So the Sanhedrin was strong, particularly in New York, even in those early years. And yeah, and so
Yeah, and it's strange, isn't it? I mean, here is an obvious cultural trait.
yes.
I mean, it's just unmistakable, and it has, it needs to be discussed. It needs to be, you know, kind of have an
Well, because
open.
it's politically and socially meaningful. Let's just put
It's
it that
very,
way.
very
Yeah.
meaningful, and it needs a lot of discussion. And it has to, the Gentiles particularly have to have discussions about it so they can react appropriately and defend themselves
Well, that's
against.
the only way you can respond to it politically is first you identify it and
Yeah,
categorize it properly.
but here you have the TikTok thing, which is obviously a maneuver, which will end up with a more pornographic and politically censored device, you
Well,
know.
Joe, can 355 bought and paid for congressmen be wrong? Congresswomen, women, men and women, I'm sorry. Show a lot of women in there too. And then you get just this past week, was a Kristi Noem, South Dakota, passed a law banning anti-Semitism. Of course, what is defined as anti-Semitism is simply criticism in many situations or regards. This is in consideration of the 350 Jews happen to live in South Dakota. I'm sure this is top on the list of South Dakotans, but Kristi Noem maybe has ambitions that require this. That's a problem, apparently. Apparently, just criticizing. I think they're trying to the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which is very broad and woolly and vague, which means any criticism, even saying true things about Jews, is considered anti-Semitic. So
Yeah,
criticism of anything is
so it's
anti-Semitic.
really, what one hopes is that the kind of hysteria that we're seeing, which is, I mean, the proposals that it's like the anti-Semitism law in South Dakota. I mean, it's just ludicrous, and you would hope that this is really at the point of diminishing returns, where they do this stuff, where they try to block it with legal maneuvers or propaganda, just actually creates more skepticism. Because this is really the area of skepticism that I think is most necessary to increase in the United States. if there's ever going to be any sort of draining of the swamp, as the expression goes, or just, you know, a more coherent kind of policy coming from government. Because right now there's just so much Jewish interest, which is self-centered to
Yes.
them, but isn't really, you know, taking into account the needs of everyone else.
Yeah, and Ben Shapiro, of course, was saying that only a conspiracy theorist would think that a measure meant to, or, you know, restrain or control China is a Jewish plot when it's transparently a Jewish plot.
Right. Well, I mean,
and everyone sees it.
I mean, again, with Shapiro, well, he's like, perfect. If Shapiro says it's not,
you know,
then
it is.
Everyone should automatically recognize that it is.
Well, the New York Times, I think, wrote it up, pretty much gave the game away. What did they write here? Well, the Jewish Federation of North America. So the Jewish Federation North of North America. By the way, there's a Jewish Federation of North America.
How many Jewish federations?
You think if they had the American, if they had the American, you know, the American Jewish Council and the ADL, they wouldn't need a Jewish Federation of North America.
Right. I mean, how many of these things do they have?
You got it covered. They said that social media is a major driver of the rise in anti-Semitism, JFNA said Wednesday in a letter to the House Energy Commerce Committee, adding TikTok to the worst offender by far. So they're giving the game away. The New York Times admitted as much. Oh, sorry, the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal created test accounts for 8 hypothetical 13-year-olds and found that within hours, the app was sending apocalyptic, conspiratorial, and highly polarized content, reflecting often extreme pro-Palestinian and pro-Israeli positions. Well, yeah, because the way TikTok works is if you start looking at something, it sends you things, from what I understand.
Yeah, of course.
A poll published in New York Times in December found that 35% of voters age 18 to 29 get their news primarily from social media, and 44% use TikTok often. The same poll showed that 48% of that age group believe Israel is intentionally killing civilians in Gaza, and 55% oppose providing further aid to Israel. This has necessitated this bill. Well, it's obviously it's not the Chinese to worry about.
That is just completely insane. I mean, it's like saying, well, wait a second. Could it be that the position that they've taken as a result of the TikTok, you know, activity is actually coherent and reasonable, and is good kind of you know, expansion of like the civic mind? I mean, they just take this position that any understanding of the Palestinians as human is just absolutely forbidden, and so it has to be squashed and is irrational. I mean, it's just that. See, they don't have a position that can stand scrutiny, you know.
Yeah.
And really, what TikTok, even though it's, you know, has so much pornography and all kinds of weird other things in it, it does increase scrutiny. And they just are at the point now where they can't have any scrutiny whatsoever, because they're just engaged in, you know, well, in genocide in Palestine, and also just, you know, crude kind of propaganda destruction of.
Well, it's yet another crude Jewish monopolistic maneuver.
Yeah.
They're using the law to steal things, more or less. And lo and behold, Mnuchin, a billionaire, is in a position to with investors to buy it, just when this law is being proposed. And by the way, he supports the law. Gee, I wonder why. You know, it's like, whatever. I mean,
it's just like in the. In the statistics of the German Reich between 1892 and 1901, Jewish crimes were, compared with Christian criminals, were 14 times greater for fraud and trickery. This is their calling card, you know? And I mean, if they were like, you know, twice or 50%, 14 times.
Yeah.
So this cannot be anything other than a cultural phenomenon. And so, The question is, well, is it still intact? Well, of course it is. And of course, you know, TikTok is, this whole maneuver is just trickery so that they can, with the sophistry around it, that look, we're trying to not let propaganda in. Well, this is nonsense. They're trying to make sure their propaganda isn't upset in any way.
Yes. Well, there's a bit of good news, a potential white pill late last week. I think it was on Mother's Day, which is also International Women's Day, whatever that means.
Yeah,
look at they co-opt things. There's a referendum in Ireland. They got walloped, the government referendum. Irish voters rejected proposals to replace the constitutional references to make up to the makeup of a family and a mother's duties in the home in a significant defeat for the government. The government had pushed the yes vote on the referendum. Prime Minister Leo Varadkar, who happens to be half Indian and homosexual, that's yeah, Ireland, yeah. Ireland 2024. He had actually supported the vote held last Friday. It coincided with International Women's Day. He said it was a chance to delete some very old-fashioned and very sexist language about women. Well, I think that's the point. There's a time and a place for sexism, I guess. A proposal to expand the definition of family from a relationship founded on marriage to include other durable relationships was rejected 67.7% to 32.3%. Our second referendum on a proposal to replace language surrounding the woman's duties in the home with a clause recognizing the role of family members in the provision of care was rejected 73.9% to 26.1%. So it's almost three quarters. Speaking to reporters in Dublin on Saturday, Varadkar said the voters had given the government two wallops. It was our responsibility to convince the majority of people to vote yes, and we clearly failed to do so. The referenda defeat represents a huge victory for the people of Ireland and the first nail in the coffin of this ideologically captured government, women's advocacy group leader Louise de Bruin said. If you look at the language of the bill, there was an interesting article. Well, one thing is when you start redefining family in the Constitution, at the same time you're flooding the country with immigrants, you figure something's up. Because what they want to do is they want to facilitate things like polygamy, which is common among some of the Muslim immigrants that are being forced upon the Irish. And also redefining family, that enters into LGBTQ and homosexual rights, gay marriage. 2015, yeah. Ireland approved gay marriage. A few years later, they changed the Constitution to deny rights to the unborn, essentially legalizing abortion. I think that as many as 10,000 abortions occurred in Ireland last year in the wake of that decision. So there's been a serious change in Ireland, Irish culture in the past 15, 20 years. And we can talk about why that is. But here it is. The article in question, the state recognizes that by her life within the home, the woman gives to the state a support without which the common good cannot be achieved. The state shall therefore endeavor to ensure that a mother shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labor to the neglect of their duties in the home. The proposed change was the state recognizes that the provision of care by members of a family to another, right, by reasons of the bonds that exist among them, gives to society support without which the common good cannot be achieved, and shall strive to support such provision. So it takes mother, specific relationship, which is mother and father, and removes the mother. So it adds that ambiguity. But again, what this is it's not so much part of this, of course, is so-called gender politics or sexual revolution here, trying to confuse the roles. There's a specific and beneficial role that women play in society. One, of course, the key to that is being mothers, raising the children, and society should be geared towards facilitating that. Economic policy, domestic policy should encourage that. By saying family, provision of care, it becomes very ambiguous. You can see what you can do with that, because they have a very broad definition of family. So the sexist language, yeah, it's sexist, but it's sexist for a reason. There's a reason why we law should recognize the complementary relation between male and female and the sex roles that they play that are natural to their physical being male and being female. And if you don't recognize that, your society is going to be in a lot of trouble, and which Ireland is.
I mean, all you have to do is just look at what has happened in the United States with the Great Society programs, which, basically were this language put into social policy, right? Where they were saying, well, we're going to support single moms and not so much women who are married. Well, look where the inner cities are now. These were probably the targets of these policies. Now they're just in utter ruins. And so you have the reality, which can help explain and enable people to predict what this, these seemingly innocuous little political language changes will actually end up being. I mean, the language where he said, they're going to have, marriage will be replaced with durable relationships.
Yes.
Durable relationships. Now, bear in mind that the prime minister, at Verek, how do you pronounce that name?
Leo Varadkar.
Okay, I'll just call him Leo. Where
Leo
was saying, you know, like you pointed out, I said, it's our responsibility to convince the majority vote yes, blah, blah, blah. They didn't do it. Well, who is R? Who is he talking about when he says it's our responsibility?
Who does he represent?
Who is he representing, for heaven's sakes, you know? And of course, remember, he was a closeted gay man before he became prime minister. Mm-hmm. And then came out, and so he is either, representing just a strict kind of Judeo-Masonic satanic, organization that wants to shatter Irish culture with his claim that it is our responsibility, or perhaps it's just a collection of gay friends that he has that want to have like their marriage.
Play house.
But in any case, it's something that needs disclosure, right? It should have this. Who in the heck is Leo actually representing here? Because he certainly isn't representing traditional Irish values. And now that he was not able to convince the majority of the people to vote yes, it's clear that whoever he is, who he means by R, they're in a very distinct minority, because these changes rejected overwhelmingly. I mean,
does this mean they'll go home? They lost?
Yeah, no, they're very relentless. they just maybe Leah would go back to India or whatever. I mean, the thing that one hopes is that we had a brief exchange, this week about it. And I would hope is that there is momentum here, because when it's rejected so overwhelmingly, perhaps people can go on to the next question as to, well, why is Leo the president? I mean, they have that Irish word for it, which is unpronounceable to
Tersich or something.
But that's only Irish people can pronounce it. So, and I'm part Irish, but I lost the that syntax.
Irish lost the Gaelic language, but to make up for it, they interspersed Gaelic terms within the English language.
Anyway, so, but my point is that, look, people should then say, okay, well, he doesn't really represent us. Whoever R is in his response to the defeat, we should recognize he is not representing Ireland. No chance. And then the question is, well, why does the Irish people have a Indian homosexual as a president? How can he possibly represent what is, can be seen as the reality and the tradition of the Irish people? It's just obviously not possible. His statement was wonderful because it's so clarifying. He's just out and out not representing the Irish people. He's representing some other entity. And so it's time that have Irish people take the next step and go say, okay, well, we've defeated this. Let's now get some politicians in there that reflect us and not them. That's what I would hope would happen here, is that they would use an enormous rejection, the percentages, as the basis for some further political action.
Yeah, I think you asked the question. One thing is, why is this different? Or is this referendum different than, say, the one in 2015, the one, was it 2019 when they legalized abortion or did away with the constitutional protection? Is that the many Irish were caught off guard by it. Not to mention the fact there might be some questions about the validity of the vote itself, but we do know that in both those votes, there were the role of Google and Facebook and other NGOs and foundations played a big part in manipulating, giving money to causes, buying up the media, like the Irish Times, to promote their agenda, particularly with young people. And this kind of began early with the so-called Celtic Tiger in the 1990s during the credit boom. And this was when Ireland became rich, in quotes, unquote.
Yeah, that worked out great, didn't it?
It was a debt and fueled, almost a debt-fueled party.
That was so ludicrous. And they called it the Celtic Tiger. I mean, look, they were just giving Irish like a place as a tax dodge and cheap money. I mean, it was obviously just, there was no increase in productive capacity of Ireland, and it
well,
was
it gave them
just
a lot of cheap money at interest, which now they're
right,
paying back.
Of course, and it created enormous debt. So the
but it
idea
also opened Ireland up because Ireland, in return for this, they became a tax haven, as you alluded to. And this is when Google—that's their Google for European headquarters—and this is when things
immigration laws changed,
yeah.
And the Celtic tiger suddenly became the captured pussycat, and then you ended up with immigration out of control.
But it was outfits like the Atlantic Council, Google, Facebook, that spearheaded the campaign, and I believe in 2015, to legalize gay marriage, and also regarding the abortion initiative. And
exactly.
So you had the role of these NGOs.
Now we're finding out who Leo is representing, aren't we?
Yeah. So this is the issue. It goes back to your representative government. And this is a similar problem that you have in the United States. And it goes back further because America in the 1950s, in the 20th century, was changed dramatically through a similar, perhaps a longer, the phase was longer, the Cultural Revolution. But you had the role of the tax-free foundations that were used. Money was dumped in there, laundered and used in there by the oligarchs like the Rockefellers, Carnegies, where they got out of production and moved into finance and banking. That's when they became Jewish, if not, in spirit, and they became predatorial. And this is the role of the tax-free foundations in spearheading things like the sexual revolution, feminism, not to mention the role of the intelligence agencies. And there was the Rees Committee looked into this, and it deliberated for 2 weeks and was shut down. So it tells you who's in charge of the United States. So basically, it's a question of representative government. And more recently in Indiana, when they passed a Religious Restoration Act in response to, push for impose gay marriage, it was Salesforce, this corporation out of San Francisco, that told the governor there, which was then Mike Pence, and the legislature to repeal the law because they didn't like it. Now, why are corporations supporting sodomy? Well, because through sexual subversion, that's how you create an atomized society, and you create eventually you produce a bunch of atomized individuals who are just wage slaves and sex robots who have no identity.
Exactly. In Brave New World, it's they're getting rid of family and ethnicity because those are the components of mm-hmm. strength, and therefore that's why they're shattering them. There is absolutely no other rationale imaginable or possible. Why would you want to get rid of family? Why would you want to get rid of ethnic pride? Aren't these things just natural and part of any kind of healthy society and mm-hmm. any human life, every kind of healthy? So if you're attacking them, you have to have your motivation exposed. And that's why, this would be a good time for Ireland to take the next step. A lot of the people who were, organized against this, that guy Park, who is sort of the head of the Irish response, he should really try to expand this issue. That's
all.
What
by the way, this is the situation. All the major political parties in Ireland supported the yes vote on these initiatives.
Everyone, yeah. Tim,
and,
I'm going to.
By the way,
I'm going to take a brief break right here. I'll be right back. Excuse
yeah,
me.
Sure.
Go on and finish that thought. I'll be back before you get done.
Sure. And it lost overwhelmingly. So you had all the political parties supporting it. They supposedly represent the Irish people, and it lost roughly either 2/3 or 3/4. So what does that tell you about, the political parties in Ireland, the government in general? Does it really represent the Irish people? Obviously, they don't, and it doesn't. And then you have to ask the next question from that, the follow-up. What's the follow-up? What do we do? Yeah, so I was saying is that all the major political parties supported yes vote on these initiatives, but they were defeated respectively, more than 2/3 and almost 3/4 by the Irish people. What does that say about the political parties and the major political parties in Ireland and the government in general? Obviously, they're not represented, not anywhere near, even Sinn Féin, right? The Ourselves Alone party supported it. They're nowhere near representing the interest of the Irish people on this.
There's nothing that could be clearer. Every major political party in Ireland was opposed, vehemently opposed, to something that nearly 70% of the population wished to have happen. So you can see that all of the parties have been infested. Everyone has been taken over. They don't reflect the Irish people. This is the same situation, of course, we have in the United States and in all of Europe. But we We need to, I hope that all of these facts can be aligned in such a way that they can be presented to the Irish people and say, look, you know, this was great. We defeated, you know, a very evil kind of clever, destructive language that they were trying to hoist into the Constitution. But let's go, let's continue. Let's go further. Let's try to, the people who voted in opposition to this, they should organize themselves. They should say, look, you know, Leo doesn't represent us. The political parties don't represent us. We need a new political party. We need to have our Irish first kind of political party that just looks to our interests.
Yeah, the I mean, Ireland wasn't Irish independence wasn't based on human rights. It wasn't based on democracy or being nice to everybody or tolerance. It was based on Irish identity. It's based on Catholicism, their independence from the British Empire. It's based on Ireland's Irish blood and soil, if you will. It wasn't based on these vague concepts of human rights and tolerance. So, but Ireland certainly is being destroyed under the pretext of those ideas, because you're doing right with identity, unique Irish culture. It's you know, obviously you flood the country. I think 20% of the population is now foreign born. You know, they're taking hundreds of thousands of migrants from North Africa and the Middle East for some reason. Who made that decision? Well, we've done shows about there have been certain people within the Irish government who weren't Catholic who made those policy decisions, like Alan Shatter, you know, who facilitated the flooding of illegal, not illegal, I guess they made them legal. It's an island nation. You think it would be very simple to control immigration.
But again,
the one thing the government's supposed to do is defend the borders. They can't do. And it's a similar thing where the migrants or immigrants or whatever, or refugees, if you will, they call them refugees if they're fleeing from something. They're being showered with all types of benefits by Irish taxpayers. Typical Irish are not. Same thing's occurring in the United States. You know, where the Biden administration is giving what $2,200 a month to illegal aliens, $5,000 debit cards
from Australia to
yes
you know, to the Ukraine. I mean, you have just a flooding of immigration, which is not in the interests of the people, but is in the interests of the oligarchs that want to shatter these cultures to make them ripe for genocide and slavery. You know, it's just going on everywhere. And if you speak against it, you know, they roll out the racist card to try to intimidate.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see if you know, this referendum emboldens the Irish to not worry so much about having people, you know, hurl charges of racism or anti-Semitism, things like this against them, as they try to, you know, focus on their self-interest, you know, and try to organize their politics accordingly, you know?
Yeah, I think the current dilemma, both in Ireland, throughout the West, and in the United States, is sort of the radical left, if you will, I want to call it that. You know, we talked last week about, you know, the 68 revolutionaries and these things, is that they had gotten inside these institutions, the so-called Long March to the Institutions, and they took over these cultural institutions. And there was always Hollywood with its own agenda, ethnic agenda, of course. But the right in the United States thought that winning, that populism, winning elections, taking over the government was enough. Well, it really wasn't, because one thing that occurs in the West is, particularly in the United States, our system is we hide the true source of power. We think it's politicians. We think it's alphabet soup agencies, and it's not. Politicians are just puppets for those who control the money spigots, the big donor class, and whoever, and their particular interest. But again, you could take over the three branches of government, but if you leave Hollywood alone, the publishing industry, academia, you know, and other fields that shape our, as you know, as Bernays said.
Culture.
Well, I think Bernays said that form our habits and minds without our knowing it. You're going to lose, and the conservatives were never quite got that right. So, you know, Ronald Reagan could win two landslide victories nationally, and even in California, people forget he was once governor of California. He got reelected, two terms, very popular governor. But California was a very different state back then, 68 to 1974. But there was going through these profound changes, And this is that when I talk about the Rees Committee hearings, investigating the role of the NGOs, the foundations, Open Society Foundation today, and these various NGOs that are engaged, you know, HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, that is undermining the sovereignty of various nations and also the United States, working in cahoots with the Department of Homeland Security, who is headed up, coincidentally, by a Jew, which he used to be a board member of HIAS. Conflict of interest. That maybe that's something we shouldn't have. Maybe that's something that should be tolerated. It's grounds for suspicion, perhaps. But the again, this idea of a bottom up populist revolution is never going to work, because it's those who are well organized, have the funding, who are going to be successful. And that's what we see today. This is a good example of this latest maneuver with TikTok. You know, it's obviously lobbying and having money and being able to bribe politicians is where the action is. It isn't righteousness of legislation, or what is even popular with the electorate, because we know the electorate do not get what they want, and they don't even know what they want, because the same people who are bribing the politicians are in the process of folding their habits and minds of thinking without them knowing about it. Culture creation. And you saw with last year when it came out with the FBI and Twittergate, and the FBI and Molly Ball in February 2021 bragging about how they manipulated the election process, not the voting process, which is problematic in and of itself with the mail-in ballots. I'm talking about controlling the flow of information. So if you're gonna praise democracy, you're gonna have to say we're defending democracy. At the same time, you're controlling and manipulating the flow of information by which voters make their decisions. You don't have a democracy.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So clever. Such a clever trick, you know, to frame it in that way. And, you know, so, well, how to reverse this?
My point is, a long march to institutions reverse isn't going to work, because the left did that while the right was sleeping. And they're not sleeping now. They're guarding these perches, these positions, very jealously. Look at Harvard University. Oh, and it's not the left, it's Jews at Harvard. The left found out what happens to them if they criticize Jews. So there's a hierarchy here, right? So you can be a liberal, you can even be black, right? You're not protected from being ousted if you run afoul of Jewish interest.
No, you can be a Palestinian, then that would help you get into Harvard, but that doesn't mean you can speak freely about your.
Well, you better damn well be a liberal and be a degenerate if you're a Palestinian and go to Harvard.
Yeah.
Because you have every ethnic identity or interest, then that's it. You got to become fully Western, which is deracinated. A deracinated sex robot. Then you're good.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've been able to get these memes sort of to become, you know, just the everyday reality for people, but they can't really stop the human mind from sort of recognizing its self-interest, in my opinion, for a very long period of time, as long as there is skepticism, as long as the minds are permitted and encouraged to just, you know, wonder, why is it that, you know, certain groups always win and other groups are always, you know, evil and racist, you know?
Well, that Norman Donald joke, says reading history, and he's relieved to find out that the good guys always win. Gee, it's good that the good guys always win. Then he kind of just looks at the audience.
Yeah.
But here's the thing is, the long march, not going to work, because they're guarding all the positions and they're not asleep at the switch, as you can see, right? With diversity, equity, and inclusion, and you know, affirmative action, and all these other initiatives, anti-white, anti-Western initiatives. So that's not going to work. But one thing is, all these initiatives like diversity, equity, inclusion, affirmative action, and these identity politics, it's creating a competency crisis in the system itself. The system starts to collapse because it doesn't have the human capital to support it anymore. At that point, perhaps parallel institutions, that type of strategy will work. I mean, you construct parallel institutions in anticipation of the collapse. Then you can
step in. You get into situations where, you know, reality just overwhelms the propaganda, like Boeing, for example, where the planes keep falling out of the sky because the maintenance crews now are all just diversity, equity, inclusion.
Look, gravity is racist.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, and yet, so this is, you know, there is a kind of reality that will cut across the propaganda, and I think that, you know, when planes fall out of the sky and And it's I think just sort of watching the Fannie Willis,
yes,
Auckland, Atlanta. You know, she was caught lying under oath, and also caught basically illegally hiring her lover and giving him extra money.
Mm-hmm.
And then the judge, a Democratic appointee, white guy, said, well, this is not really a problem. I mean, this just sort of suggests that people accept the end of civilization and the legal system, you know, because it's just such an outrageous conclusion on the judge's part. It could only happen in a kind of decadent, controlled political arena, you know, like we have in Georgia. But, you know, when one hopes that these kinds of really overt, you know, sort of indicators that the diversity and equity propaganda has produced a dysfunctional and dangerous world to live in,
mm-hmm.
You know, we'll start people thinking about that, you know, that maybe diversity and equity are not just universal panaceas that any kind of criticism of is reflective of neurosis, you know? I mean, maybe people will start to go, you know, we got to look at this a little more clearly, and they'd be emboldened. So you need skepticism, and then you need to have enough courage, you know, instilled in the people to start taking their thinking into, you know, dangerous places, because they've been told they're dangerous.
You know? And you can talk about it on TikTok for the time being.
Yeah, exactly. TikTok. I mean, it's fascinating to see how this will play out. I just, you know, I'm wondering, will TikTok go to an all pornography channel? It'll just become like...
Well, then it'll be truly free.
Mm-hmm.
Truly free.
Yeah.
It's such a transparent maneuver. And look, it's like everyone's calling it out. You know, it's Chinese.
It's outrageous. It's just literally outrageous.
Yeah. Well, one thing that you call, say, for lack of a better term, right, dissident right or right versus left, call that, you know, that dichotomy has on their side or our side, is that it has, well, the truth, and also it has aesthetics. So these things are appealing. And so you don't need as much money and power to, you know, to you don't have to suspend truth. It suspends itself. Where they've spent a whole lot of money lying. And you see it now, these maneuvers where they're just showing their hand, and now they're kind of looking ridiculous. They don't care because they have chutzpah. And so they don't understand limits or recognize limits, or then they go too far, you know. And this is why 109 times they've been kicked out of various nations and countries because of their behavior. And they just think everyone else is just crazy, and it's nothing to do with them. I go to 109 parties, get kicked out. I go to 109 bars and get kicked out. Hey, what's wrong with you all, people? I'm great.
You know, value judgments aside, it just indicates that the cultures really can't integrate. And what happens is that one side or the other has to have control. And this is, when the side that has control is a tiny minority, it's basically a dictatorship that's been established, right?
Yeah, and malevolent. That's another thing you talk about.
It has to be malevolent. And that's why, you know,
This is where you're teaching, like you talk about Talmudic teachings in yeshiva schools. Now, this isn't some arcane ancient religion. These things have been taught generation through generation, that they've been internalized. And although they may not be experts in the Talmud, they've internalized this attitude, this belief, particularly how they relate to other people. So you have something like Christianity, which broadly says, you know, love thy neighbor as yourself. Now, practically, that may not work out every day, but it's a nice thought. But if you're a religion that says hate thy neighbor, that's a serious problem.
You know, I will say that the historical sort of reality of all this is not well understood. But in my impression is that Judaism, left alone, or with Masonic influence in 7th century, trying to merge Christian culture. And this is why you are he's talking about, pardon me?
Tim? You're breaking up. Yeah, you're breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh dear. Okay. Anyway, so what happened was the Freemasons really shaped Judah, in my opinion, and they were really responsible for the advent of the Talmudic yeshiva schools in the Pale. Before that, there really wasn't that kind of racially focused Judaism. There wasn't, and Talmudic Judaism wasn't, you know, very, as far as I can tell, very popular at all. So what happened was is that when Russia, in concert with other nations, decided that the Jews should be controlled within a region, the Masons came in and created the Talmudic schools. And this was actually done for the purpose of racializing the Jews. I mean, do you know that the word Jew really wasn't even used in the 16th and early 17th century? It was it kind of wasn't a self description that they were using. So when they set up the Yeshiva Talmudic academies in the Pale, I'm sure that this was done for the purpose of promoting Zionism and also for world domination. I mean, ultimately, but so that's really, you know, what you're dealing with is you're dealing with the Talmudic Zionist Judaism, which was established, you know, in through the yeshiva schools and in the Talmudic academies in the Pale, that then their followers then immigrated. And that's who came to the United States and came into Germany. And then you ended up with, you know, this kind of really focused, racially antagonistic Judaism, which then, you know, produced the statistics I mentioned earlier, you know, where it's like they were literally soldiers in a way, you know, of this form of Judaism that the Masons had developed for the purpose of basically establishing themselves in financial and political power, which would ultimately lead to, you know, World War I, World War II, you know, where they could really depopulate the Europeans. So, you know, I think that's an important history. We should maybe someday do a show about that, about the yeshiva schools and who was influencing them and how that form of Judaism became the one that is dominant in the world today and how dangerous it is because of all that.
Yeah, Jewish sort of was dormant. Up until perhaps the late 18th, early 19th century. And some say it was the when Jews ran into the Enlightenment, you had the Jewish Enlightenment. And a lot of these Jews abandoned what they had of religion and embraced radical politics. But still, there was their idea of the chosen people and to tikkun olam, they can improve the world. And this was, of course, the revolutionary, like a Trotsky, who believe in God per se, but certainly believe that he was. And also the Sabbatean cults, which 17th century, which is another phase of sort of Jewish irrationalism and extremism, the idea of this, you know, the Messiah, the Sabbatean cults. And that's when you had this inversion where all things permitted must be permitted. And you sort of like, you imitize the eschaton by engaging in immoral behavior. And then that collapsed because he was proven a fraud. Sabbatai Zevi was proven a fraud, but then you have the 19th century rise of nationalism, the parallel settlement, the Jewish population was exploding in the Pale, and there wasn't enough positions for, you know, for the Jewish middleman, and they certainly didn't want to engage in something as grubby as farming. So they started immigrating west, and they claimed they were persecuted. And another situation where these things were grossly exaggerated or they're taken out of context. And then they emigrated west, to Germany, then the United States. And then this is the 1880s, 1890s, 20th century. Then yet they're coming to the United States when technology is really picking up, particularly the ability to shape culture. And obviously that with development of radio, of recorded music, and then of course the motion picture, big thing, and then television. This is why now they're maneuvering to dominate TikTok. They don't invent anything; they take it over. They didn't invent radio. They didn't invent the photograph, the phonograph. They didn't invent the motion picture, the camera. But they took it and ran with it. And one of the reasons why they ran out to California was to get rid of the getaway from patent claims that were being made against them back east. It wasn't just the weather.
Yeah, I mean, Hollywood was obviously established, you know, for the purpose of culturally degenerate propaganda.
I mean, this really was
almost immediately. I mean, it was.
Well, if anyone who disputes that, just show them Bimbo's Initiation, the cartoon, Fleischer and Disney's cartoon, and you can see it's just right in your face. That,
well, wasn't the Nickelodeon, weren't those like porn films and like Philadelphia and all that?
Originally, yeah. So, they've always had this idea that pornography could be used to shatter culture, and they just had a they had to go through an incremental process to be able to get to the point we are now, where it's just this torrent of filth that just, well, filth, it's pornography, it's just a way to take sexuality and to remove it from the context of marriage and relationship and to put it in the public domain. Once they've done that, then marriage can't really ever be assembled out of it. You look at all
Don't we all just yearn for a durable relationship?
Of course, we're designed for that. We're just designed biologically and psychologically for that. So, and that's why, it produces such strength, right? Is because the human involved in that is operating within this normal.
But it also presumes certain proscriptions and prescriptions, meaning it's a lot of do's and don'ts that's going to work, and they don't like that. They want to be able to do whatever the heck they want and not do. The reality is that most people can't get away with it. They'll immediately be affected with the consequences of their behavior, and they'll pay for it, whether they know it or not. But if you do away with things like prescription and morality, it's not as if that every man is king. It's that those who have the money can be king, like a Bill Gates or a Mnuchin.
Sexual restraint is the foundation of civilization. I mean, you just have to have this, and to like make it something that is ridiculed. I mean, you're just, it's satanic. You're just going to lead into what I refer to as the fentanyl brigade is where this all ends up. So, these are all being, step by step are being taken into this place. And, we're being demolished culturally by, what came out of the pale in the 1880s with the immigration wave. This is really the group that set up Hollywood. It's been pointed out that they refer to them as Jews from Eastern Europe, right? This was sometimes, like a euphemism for the people who established. But these are just what they're really saying, that it would be more accurate for them to say, the students from the Yeshiva Talmudic academies in the Pale, right? That's really what has happened here. That's really who the Warner Brothers
Goldwyn Mayer and Warner Brothers.
They are either direct immigrants or the descendants of immigrants who are in part of the Yeshiva Talmudic school movement that, in my opinion, was established by the Masons, in like the 1880s, 1860s, which was, coincides with Palmerston's declaration in 1840 that now is the time for the Jews to return to the Holy Land. In other words, Palmerston's statement was profoundly Zionistic, right? But it wasn't something that connected with the Jews of Europe at that time. They hadn't been culturally shaped. So making the statement, he had to be aware that there would be a cohort of Jews that would come into existence to fulfill his prophecy. So it's just self-evident that the Talmudic academies were Masonic, just like Palmerston, who pretended to be a Christian, though he really didn't pretend very hard. He was kind of known as a Freemason and a Satanist, but he certainly didn't present himself as a Jew. It was clear, that there was a connection between the two in my mind, that, you have to, in order for Palmerston to be able to know that this was going to happen and that Zionism would have a future in Europe, there had to be activity on the other side, on the Jewish side, right, to produce this movement. And it's interesting to look at that, because you can see that the whole Jewish kind of racially identified Zionism that we have today, like Netanyahu and Ben Shapiro, these are artificial characters. They were created, actually. They don't reflect kind of Jewish, what was Jewish culture in like 1850. that all had to be created. And now they, you know, when they stand there, they say, well, this is 2,000 years of, you know, Jewish culture. It's nonsense. I mean, it's a very recent political movement, and it's very artificial.
Yeah. In any event, you don't want people like Jack Warner or Louis Mayer or Samuel Goldwyn, who emerged from the yeshiva schools in that area, controlling the movies and entertainment fair for the country.
For your children. Yeah,
your children. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, not only are they coming, but they immediately assume these purchases one way or another to control the culture or shape the culture with movies. Now, at the time, there was some serious kickback or, you know, opposition because of the demographic and ethnic makeup of America. They had to sort of genuflect to public sensibilities at the time, but it was a gradual process. But when it's like Joe Breen, who ran the production code, lease enforced production code in Hollywood, he said of Hollywood, you know, they're the most disgusting, degenerate people you have. I'm paraphrasing. People you ever meet, all they care about is money. They're all degenerates, and you don't want them controlling what's the entertainment fair for the country. And you need organized, largely ethnic-based, demographic-based opposition to this. That was smashed in the middle part of the 20th century with, you know, with suburbia, interstate highway system, consumerism, television, and also it became a delit or became not acceptable now to criticize Jews as an ethnic group because of the Holocaust narrative. So that sort of ethnic response to Jewish, to you know, destructive or Jewish influence became, you became associated, you would be called a Nazi if you ever, you know, dared to criticize Jews as a group and their influence on culture and finance. Regardless of the fact that evidently it's immense, because you see the maneuvers with Mnuchin and his consortium to monopolize yet another tech company, just so they can knock shut everything down. And it's all this. There's an ethnic strategy there.
It's well said, Tim. And this is why Rudolph did such a great thing with the assembling of all the information that he's put into the Holocaust Encyclopedia, and by his selflessness in putting it online. So you can actually just Google Holocaust Encyclopedia and go to, you know, his information, and everyone should have access to this, because
the ADL makes sure that Google doesn't suppresses that, by the way.
Okay. Right. Anyway, you need to have the people who are sort of engaged in the cultural war and are trying to get, you know, better understanding of the Holocaust, because as you pointed out, it's the premier sort of intellectual intimidating structure, keeps people from thinking clearly, you know, the Holocaust denier and Holocaust worship, you know, they're two sides of the same coin, but it just keeps people from thinking clearly. So, you know, what cut through all that is the facts, and Rudolph has assembled them. And if you go to like absurd claims and look at them in a overall structure, you see the hundreds of data points he's assembled, you can really see the themes which show it's just a gigantic pack of lies. And there are really comical and ludicrous, you know, examples of absurd claims concerning, you know, Holocaust victims. And I found that people are not aware of these claims. You know, people sort of in general in our culture just have this dead mind when it comes to the Holocaust, and they just think that there are coherent, you know, kind of eyewitness testimony and things. But when you start showing them that the eyewitnesses in so many cases are not just clearly wrong, but are ludicrous, couldn't possibly be real, then you can start to move people to the idea that, well, why would they lie? Why would they need to do this? What is this a reflection of? You see what I mean? It's like the most absurd stories, which are all have been unchallenged and put into our like intellectual world. When you start pointing them out, how they are impossible, and the number of them, they start to break down the inability to be kind of rational and skeptical about the Holocaust. I mean, I mentioned last week the claim that was actually read into the testimony in Nuremberg that the Germans had developed an atomic bomb and had used it to evaporate Jews. I mean, it's actually a claim. I mean, it's considered, you know, serious enough with enough evidence that an attorney brought it up in the Nuremberg trial. So you know, well, how could this possibly be accepted as something that's real? Well, it can't. It shouldn't be. And you know, like, you know, he has like pictures of the shrunken heads, so you can see that these are also just propaganda elements, you know. I mean, I think this information, in my mind, is just absolutely citizenry 101. I mean, everyone who wants to engage in kind of cultural discussion and cultural influence, you should have this stuff at your fingertips.
Yeah, well, they lie because they get money and power from it. So that's the motivation.
Yep.
Some of that. And so they say it's the most documented event in history, but no one ever has to look at the documents.
Right. Yeah. Is it really the most documented?
Is it really? So that's the source of the power. And basically, they control, organized jury controls public debate by accusing people of the anti-Semitic or anti-Semitism. And so if you're concerned with like abortion issue or pornography or the Middle East or any number of issues.
Holocaust history. You know?
If you're concerned about being, if you're policing the world for anti-Semitism, and basically you're working against your own interests, because you can't address those issues, because ultimately those things are all Jewish, you know, supported, yeah, largely, you know, Jewish driven.
Isn't it funny, Tim, how it's all just one system? I mean, we talk about all these hundreds of different, but it already comes down. It's like the Irish situation with their Indian homosexual leader trying to get them to include, you know, gay relationships, you know, in the Constitution. It's all one system. It's all, everything that we're seeing, all of the cultural world, you know, all of these things, it all comes back to the control of the media and the narrative that, you know, the Masonic Judaic organization has, you know, and it's all, every bit of it is malevolent. It's every bit of it is has secret agenda. Every bit of it actually leads to genocide. So it's a good time for people to start talking, you know?
Yeah, go on TikTok and talk about it while you can.
Yeah, but just stay off the pornography.
Yeah, well, they'll send that to you anyway. So, yeah. Okay, Joe.
Thank you so much for the time. We'll get them next week, buddy.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.